Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
The extreme road to Philly continues. We're looking just at ECW wrestlers. And this week, it's Mike Awesome.
Awesome!
There were so many signs for Mike Awesome during these matches. And I was like, The Miz is just somewhere out there just stealing this bit. It's obviously not the same. His name is just Mike Awesome.
He's not at all the same.
Not like The Miz at all. Hey, we're 2 weeks out from WrestleMania in Philadelphia. That is where we will be. We will be at WrestleMania 40. We hope to meet with people who have been listening to the podcast. If you're going to WrestleMania 40, hit us up on social media. Here's a little bit of what you can expect for the podcast going to WrestleMania. There's going to be podcast episodes for each night of WrestleMania as soon as we get back to our hotel. We're going to be recording episodes about what was at WrestleMania. So there's no typical Crossbody of Work episode that week, but you can catch up on all the WrestleMania stuff. Here are our thoughts on being there live each night, as well as on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. There's going to be a WrestleMania preview pod. There's going to be predictions for WrestleMania. There's going to be predictions for Stand and Deliver, predictions for ROH Supercard of Honor, more WrestleMania-themed games, some other cool YouTube videos. Make sure you subscribe to us. We've hit 250 subscribers this week. Very cool. Make sure you join us as we have all that WrestleMania-themed content. There's so much to do, and we're getting ready for it.
I'm super excited. You're super excited. And hopefully we get to walk out of night two with Kingdom playing.
I'm so ready. Let's talk about Mike Awesome. What do you know about Mike Awesome?
Power bombs. His name is Mike Awesome. That 70s guy. Big guy.
Fat chick thriller. Michael Lee Alfonso from Tampa, Florida. And I mentioned that he's from Tampa, Florida, because in the span of his career, he ends up on Team Canada twice. He ends up on a Team Canada in FMW. He also ends up on Team Canada in WCW. He's from Florida.
Also, I saw that he was cousins with Horace Hogan.
That is real, brother. That is not fake. That is not kayfabe. He is a shoot cousin of Horace Hogan.
So random.
Very, very random. Michael Alfonso was trained to wrestle by Steve Kern, debuted in February of 1989 at the Eddie Graham Sports Complex in Orlando, Florida. He trained for about a year alongside fellow professional wrestlers Big Al Green and Dennis Knight, a.k.a. Midian. So Midian trained alongside Mike Awesome.
My go. Listen, what a class. That's all I got to say.
Yeah,
what
an
absolute class.
Yeah, get shit on
professional talent.
Alfonso moved to Japan, joining Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, or as we know it, FMW, in September of 1990, using the name The Gladiator. He was originally was supposed to be Al Green, his co-trainer that he was training with, but he ended up going to WCW instead. He did some things, like I said, 93, he joined a Team Canada, which was a villainous faction that included Big Titan, which is Rick Bogner, a.k.a. Fake Razor Ramon. Luther, like the one in AEW.
Oh, my guy. Yeah. Luther!
And Horace Boulder, a.k.a. real-life cousin Horace Hogan.
Okay. How many of those people are Canadian?
Like one. I think it's one.
Is it just Luther?
I think it's just Luther. Rick Bogner, I think, might actually be Canadian, too. So it might be two. Gladiator and Titan. Fake Razor, would win the tag titles in a double elimination tournament in January of 94. They'd lose the title. They'd feud with each other, with Gladiator winning 2 out of 3 against Titan. And then Atsushi Onita retired. And so that led to a change in direction for FMW. It was less about the death matches and instead a little bit more technical wrestling. And they pushed Gladiator to be the big heel to go up against star Hayabusa. And that's where our first match takes place. It is the tournament finals for the Brass Knuckle Heavyweight Championship, a.k.a. FMW's world title. September 26, 1995, Gladiator versus Hayabusa.
What a match this was, brother.
I want to shout out Brad FMW on YouTube, who, when we did the Onita episode, he showed up multiple times. He has uploaded his 101 favorite matches from FMW.
My
unbelievable content. Such amazing stuff there. And like FMW is one of the only libraries that isn't owned by WWE. So the fact that it exists on the internet is so crucial and so cool.
Yeah. One of a little peek behind the curtain for the fans here. When we were doing setup stuff for content that's to be released soon, Yes. I had to quickly hop on YouTube to find a little video, and yes, the like fill in for my search bar was directly to Brad FMW's YouTube account.
The man is doing God's work. So there's some pre-match promos. Hayabusa is obviously in Japanese. He's saying he has to win the title. Awesome has a Band-Aid on his forehead, face paint, and genuinely a Hulk Hogan impression for his promo.
That's, I could not take him serious after he said brother. After he called Hayabusa brother, he goes, Hayabusa brother, or you listen here, brother, or something like that. I lost my shit. I could not continue taking a single word he said after that serious.
He says he's got to go home and lick his wounds. It's a weird time. Also a weird time. They play both the American and Japanese national anthem before the match.
Like, it's like, what is this? Is this an F1 race? Like, what's happening right now?
This is a basketball game. What'd you think of the match?
Is this a basketball game? Is that what happens at every... Wait, is that what happens at every Toronto Raptors game? Do they play both national anthems?
They do.
That's insane. I thought this was an excellent match. This is not my recommendation for the week.
Me neither.
But that is not to diminish the quality of this. This would be the recommendation level quality match for most people's episodes. Just, it just so happens that this week, Mike Awesome is really
bangers
good.
Coming. Yeah. A couple things I noted before the match started. One, Awesome is in, I'm going to call him Awesome here, even though his name's Gladiator. Also, because he has Awesome on his tights. Like, he was wrestling as Mike Awesome, but in, he just didn't care. Like, he's like, it's in English. Who cares? Like, they don't know what it says. Like, yeah. He's like, doesn't matter. Also, how weird is it to be watching an FMW match and there's ropes?
I didn't even think about that until you just said that.
Weirdest thing? Like, I'd feel like no wrestler in FMW who's been there a while knows how to run the ropes, because usually they're like barbed wire exploding matches. Like, fuck.
Did we do an FMW match for the Foley episodes?
Yes, we did. There was an FMW match.
There was I assume that one had to have had ropes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just also carnage.
It's just the last time we were in FMW was Onita, and
months ago.
That man was exploding all of the time. Very weird that we're going to see him in Philadelphia. Very weird.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So here's the thing with this match is it's a very technical match. They work the style early on of like an 80s kind of wrestling match where they really are just targeting one body part each. Like, Awesome's working the leg early, like he's really doing that. Then he starts working over the arm. He's really starting to wear him out. He gets a chair because no rules apply to Mike Awesome. He just goes, gets a chair, and just decides to hit people with it.
Hayabusa is spending his whole time trying to keep Awesome down. Long headlocks, like shots to the legs. He's trying to knock the big man
many drop kicks to the knee.
Some really like pinpoint drop kicks. There's a missile basement drop kick, essentially, which is hard to do.
I mean, listen, everything was possible until I took an arrow to the knee.
That's fair. I haven't finished that game. It's one of my my gaming gaps.
I have finished it completely twice, and I technically have never finished it because you can never finish an Elder Scrolls game.
It was one of the situations where my older brother had the game, and so I'd have to play on his. I was the Xbox, he was the PlayStation, and he had it for PlayStation, and I would play it, and then I never had enough time to finish it, and then I haven't gone back. It's my gaming gap.
Eighth grade when that game was released.
Oh my god, I feel ancient. All right. Some important things that happened. Hayabusa hits a shooting star press that looks so clean.
Oh my god. And he does it from like such a close, like Mike Awesome is like very close to the corner.
Yeah. Awesome in this match has some real technical skills, but also some batshit insane things that he does.
He knocks Hayabusa off the top rope at one point to the outside, then hits a springboard dive.
Yeah.
Awesome. A running lariat.
What do you think Awesome is listed at for size?
He's a tall guy. I would guess he's probably around like 6'8", like shoot or kayfabe weight.
Listed on Wikipedia.
On Wikipedia. I would say he's like 6'8", 280.
6'6", 292. Oh, big fella.
Beefy boy, man.
He's a beefy boy.
He's just so much taller than everyone that he works with that I just figured he's probably like 6'8".
That's true.
Some great stuff by Gladiator here. Big clothesline, big splash, diving clothesline. Yeah.
Hayabusa does that missile dropkick you mentioned to the knee. He slips out of a powerbomb, hits another dropkick to the knee. He does a springboard spinning heel kick, which was very, very nice.
That's good stuff.
Then hits a very weak-looking powerbomb for a near fall.
Yeah, I feel like you shouldn't do powerbombs when you're playing against Mike Awesome, because every time Mike Awesome hits a powerbomb, it looks like it's going to kill you. Like, later on, Gladiator hits a powerbomb as Hayabusa is doing a Frankensteiner attempt, and it just crumples him.
I mean, look, the thing is, like, Hayabusa's tall. Like, for the style that he wrestled, you wouldn't think Hayabusa is as tall as he is. Like, he's not like, it's like he's like 5'8 out there. Like, the guy, I don't know how tall he is, but like, I would guess he's all of like 6'1. Something like that. So, like, you know, he's him going for a powerbomb is believable. The problem is Mike Awesome is 292 pounds.
Yeah. Hayabusa listed 6 feet clean.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very much in the Seth Rollins build, except he's not CrossFit Jesus, so he's not actually that big.
let's go to the finish of this match. So Gladiator, like I said, that powerbomb was Hayabusa's trying Frankensteiner, gets a second powerbomb, hits a huge splash. Hayabusa does get a superplex after meeting Gladiator in the top rope, goes up for a moonsault, gets a two. We then get a top rope awesome bomb.
Sit out, awesome bomb. I don't know if he always sits down on the awesome bomb. I don't think so.
Not.
I think
he just chucks people.
Yeah, but he sat out. He hit a top rope, sit out power bomb.
It's so good.
Nobody should ever kick out of that.
And Hayabusa didn't. Gladiator's the champion. He's the brass knuckles heavyweight champion. This is not this reign. In his second reign, Gladiator would be the longest reigning world champion in FMW history. Yeah, wow. I did not know Mike Awesome had
like
that.
To this day? Like,
I believe to this day damn. That he is the...
I also, to be fair, I don't know if FMW is still around in a real capacity, so...
I'm going to look. The reign in days? Yeah, Gladiator, May 27th, 1996. He was the champion until September 28th, 1997, when he lost it to Masato Tanaka. So, Mike Awesome would leave FMW for good in 1998. Simultaneously, he was doing some appearances in before Eastern Championship Wrestling and then eventually Extreme Championship Wrestling. Essentially, Paul Heyman brought over Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome, who were two rivals in FMW, one of the best rivalries in FMW, and just said, hey, what you did over there, do it over here. And they did. Awesome began in ECW by losing to Tanaka on an episode of Hardcore TV, and then following the match, Awesome bombed him over the top rope through a table, and everyone in Philadelphia collectively lost their minds. So that led to this match, ECW Heat Wave 1998, Awesome versus Tanaka, one of the best rivalries in ECW history.
Evan, go ahead. Just fangirl for a second.
I didn't watch these live, right? I wasn't into wrestling until 99. I've said that before. St. Valentine's Day Massacre, whatever.
You were a child.
I was a child. However, my brother got back in the day when you got actual compilation DVDs, like you would be like, what's the best of ECW, right? And on every single volume of best of ECW, there is at least one Tanaka versus Awesome match. And if you could wear out a DVD, we would have. Just to see Masato Tanaka eat chair shots to the face. He just eats chair shots to the head. It's crazy.
Here's the thing that I didn't even know, and now I want to do the Masato Tanaka episode because I'm very intrigued by this. So I will always say that Kane is the greatest unprotected chair shot to the head taker I have ever seen.
Yeah,
Masato Tanaka gave that man a run for his money in this match.
Tanaka is built different, and it scares me. It genuinely scares me the way that he takes these. But
he is not a very big man.
5'11", 202. I just looked it up.
He was eating it from a freaking 6'6" giant of a man. It is insane. The crowd is big here. They're like not in the ECW arena. This is like an arena.
Yeah, I'm going to look at where Heat Wave 98 was.
Awesome runs up to, like, he just runs up the corner, kind of like he runs towards the corner, climbs the middle and top rope, and then just hits a back elbow.
It is the Hara Arena in Dayton, Ohio.
Ooh, shout out to Dayton.
Capacity of 4,400.
I predicted Dayton to win their first round match. I predicted both Atlantic 10 teams to win their matchups, and they did.
I did not. Not a good
and
time.
You to lose.
Play. Yes,
I only got two picks wrong on day one. And one of them was entirely my fault. I was a dumbass for picking that. I picked Long Beach State over whoever they faced, Houston probably.
People love Long Beach State.
And that was
Arizona, I think.
Yeah, Arizona. And I got that one entirely wrong. And then I picked Kentucky to win because everyone probably picked Kentucky to win.
So did I. So early in this match, Tanaka tries to shoulder block Awesome. Awesome says, "Get off me, motherfucker." And a capture overhead belly to belly suplex. Oh,
great. Slingshots shoulder tackle. By the way, Mike Awesome, an incredible bag. Just an insane bag of moves, bro.
For a big man, I think underrated agility from Mike Awesome.
I cannot think of many people who have a deeper bag than that at his size.
I'm going to say, like, it's probably the training from Japan, right? Like going over there and just seeing the style. Like, I'm sure he developed his bag a lot over there because he was there, especially during the non-deathmatch times. And yeah, like, he's just got so many weird moves. And yeah, of course, a staple of his offense is powerbomb, pick somebody up, fucking chuck them. Like, that's
Look,
part
man,
of it.
Here's the
he
thing.
Does other stuff.
Like, people are like, oh, Wardlow is, he's just Ryback, all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. When Wardlow hits a powerbomb, I want to, like, I tears start flowing out of my eyes. It's the powerbomb is an art form that I just feel people underappreciate. There is a beauty to a man picking up another man and fucking just boom, you know?
Man sad, man see powerbomb, man happy. Simple.
That's all I'm saying. Simple, it's like simple. Godzilla and King Kong. Like, the movie's coming out soon. I can't wait for it. And I can't explain to you why. But there's just something inside of me that is like a primal thing that is just in there that is just like, oh, big monkey and big lizard, nuke lizard, they team up, I'm there.
Love it. Tanaka gets close onto the outside. Awesome with a dive, lands headfirst under the barricade and gets stuck. How? Yeah. How do you do that? There's some other stuff. Top rope clothesline for a two. Awesome hits a release German. Tanaka immediately pops up, hits a power slam and a running clothes or a springboard clothesline. It's like, okay.
Oh my God.
The only person who's allowed to no sell is Masato Tanaka.
And Sting.
Yes, AEW Sting specifically.
Tanaka runs all the way up the ramp, comes back down the ramp with a chair. It just basically clotheslines Awesome with the chair.
It's great. Then they do a dueling chair spot, which is something they did in pretty much every match in some capacity. So they're
Tanaka wins.
Tanaka does win. They're literally hitting each other with like their swords, but with chairs. Hits a chair shot across the spine. Awesome whipped into the barricade, and then Awesome backdrops Tanaka into the front row. ECW was a dangerous place, man. If you got front row tickets, like, you probably were getting like kicked in the face by somebody. Spike Dudley might hit you in the face by diving at you. Like,
but also, like, are you know, you might just stab someone by accident. Like,
this is true.
If you got something sharp, you might just accidentally, oh, what?
Yeah.
Now I got a case. Awesome hits an awesome bomb for a near fall.
Yep.
It's an Alabama slam, which is just an insane thing that's in his moveset.
Maybe the best Alabama slam in the business. This is so good. I think he's the right height, and he's just so snappy with it. It's so good.
Here's the thing. He's kind of safer with it now, but at first I thought it was great. Drew McIntyre's like reverse Alabama slam is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that move.
Hey, and then we get this section brought to you by CTE. Tanaka just eats chair shots to the head, just repeatedly. Awesome cracks him multiple times. Tanaka kicks out.
Shout out to CTE SPN. Yes, it is. There is a lot on the third one. He knocks him out. Running release, awesome bomb. He doesn't go for the pin.
Mm-mm.
Instead, he goes for my finisher. He hits the chair shot off the top rope.
I got so happy when I saw that was in this match. I was like, Javier's going to love this because that is your finisher.
I popped so hard. It's the greatest thing ever. Awesome Tanaka really wants the bomb. Through
Yeah, Tanaka escapes through because he wants to do the same thing he did to him in Heatwave TV where he powerbombs him from the ring through the outside table. Tanaka escapes and does that to Awesome instead. 5'11", Masato Tanaka powerbombs Mike Awesome from the ring through a table at ringside. And I swear to God, ECW crowd comes unglued in a way I haven't heard in forever.
You think
Stone Cold's glass broke? Like, it's crazy.
Just won the title in the main event. It's just, I wrote it in all caps.
Awesome lands very much on his neck.
Oh, not the worst neck landing on this episode. We will get to that. But it is bad. Tanaka hits a discus elbow for a near fall, and then he follows it up with a tornado DDT on a stack of chairs. 1, 2, 3, Masato Tanaka beats Mike Awesome.
It's good stuff.
It's still not my recommendation for the week.
We are going to see Masato Tanaka again this episode. Surprise, surprise. We are going to take a break. When we get back, Mike Awesome is the ECW World Heavyweight Champion. Back from the break, almost immediately upon arriving in ECW for his third runaround, which was September of 99, he won the ECW World Heavyweight Championship at Anarchy Rules by defeating Taz and Masato Tanaka in a three-way dance, a match that we've covered in Taz's episode because I thought Taz was in it for longer. Taz is in that match for 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And then it's another Masato Tanaka Mike Awesome match, and it rules.
It rules.
Then he would defend it against a variety of people, but we have picked his defense at Guilty as Charged 2000, so the January pay-per-view. It is the ECW Heavyweight Championship on the line against Little Spike Dudley.
Yeah. I think legally this should be illegal. Like, I think that legally it should be illegal.
It's like a moral. Like, it's wrong.
This should be. Where did this pay per view take place? Was this the East? This is in Birmingham, Alabama. I think this should be illegal in Alabama. Like, this should not be a thing that should happen. You know what I mean?
You're probably right. Little Spike Dudley, we all know Spike Dudley, you know, famous. He was in WWE, he was in TNA, but he started in ECW as like his big break, as the runt of the litter, obviously. He's listed 5'8", 150.
It's just not fair, you know? Like, it's just not right.
Spike is out first, obviously, because he's not the champion.
Yeah.
Immediately is setting up tables around ringside. He's just running around, just setting up tables. He's got the ref helping him. He's like, come on, I need these. Like, set them all up. He stacks a couple. He's ready for war.
Like, I respect it. Really, I do. But, man.
Apparently, in the lead up to this, I don't know who the woman was, but somebody that Spike Dudley was like associated with, Mike Awesome, knocked her teeth out.
So
Spike gets on the mic and says, Awesome made a name for himself by putting people through tables and beating up women. Well, Spike made a name. I made a name for myself by going through tables and beating up bullies like you. Mike Awesome comes out and immediately press slams Spike through a table at ringside.
he tosses Spike onto a stacked tables at one point.
That's the second. So Spike Awesome comes out. He tosses him through one side, one table. Brings Spike back in the ring, tosses him through the stack of tables on the opposite side.
And then he sends him over the rail and then dives onto him.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. I also want to say here, this specific era of Mike Awesome is, I think, the best he looks.
Yeah.
I think
physique-wise, 100%.
Physique. Also, the mullet works. You got to respect the Mike Awesome mullet. It works.
Yeah.
It's one chair shot off the top rope away from me wanting him to just, what was the where are we in 2000? What is the date?
It's January of 2000. He should beat The Rock.
It should have been a fatal five way at WrestleMania.
He wins instead of Rock and Big Show. He just eliminates them both. I love that. Yeah, Spike is getting absolutely demolished here.
Like he gets back into the ring, hits a nail, slingshot splash, gets a cocky cover on it though, so it's a near fall. Then he just starts toying with Spike. Literally toying with him.
Spike does get out. There's not an awesome bomb attempt. Spike with some punches and a head scissors take him to the outside. Spike dives off the apron and then hits what we know in WWE is a Dudley Dog, but in ECW was the Acid Drop.
Which is just hilarious name.
Great name. Runs up the barricade and lands him on the barricade, essentially guillotining Awesome, which was a really good move.
Gives him chair shots afterwards, too.
I don't think we've talked about the Dudley Dog or the Acid Drop. This was the number one move I would hit on my brother's friend. We had my brother's best friend would come over and we'd watch ECW, and I was like 7-8 years old and he was 16, and he would always let me hit him with a Dudley Dog because I'm obviously much smaller than them. So I would I'd run up my brother's desk and then hit him with the Dudley Dog onto the bed, and my brother's friend would sell it like he was dead. It was the best. It was the absolute bee's knees. I would hit Ryan with the Dudley Dog.
You're better than me because I 100 screw the Dudley Dog. 100% RVD's 5-star frog splash is getting hit.
There was one time I distinctly remember, instead of taking the move, he held me and then just kind of turned it into like a power slam, and it hurt. I know I landed on a bed. It hurt. He was not a small guy.
Jesus Christ.
Spike goes for a suicide dive and is comically short. Like Kevin Hart, like comically short. And
yeah, the crowd even lets him know with massive "you fucked up" chants.
Awesome does catch him though, so shout out to Awesome. But then Awesome also chants "you fucked up" at him at ringside. He's like, listen, I'm a professional. You're not going to die on my watch, but you did fuck up.
Yeah, you fucked up bad. A little later, Don, a Spike score hits a Frankensteiner.
Yeah,
hits a flying stomp. Awesome kicks a chair into his face.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough for Spike. Awesome dives
throws
off
him into the rail again.
Yeah, he dives off the top rope onto Spike into the crowd.
Yeah,
it's a lot of getting his shit kicked.
Awesome sets up another table. Spike just starts clinging onto his leg for dear life.
What is he supposed to do? He's so
and,
small.
You know, here's the thing. I do appreciate the quick thinking of just saying fuck it and just hitting a low blow.
Yeah.
Because that's what Spike does. And then he does another acid drop through that table.
It was awesome. That acid drop through the table. Like, this is the ultimate hope spot in this match. Once he hits that low blow and that acid drop through the table, you're like, oh.
There's a chance. And then he grabs some cables and he starts choking him.
Hits him with a chair. Does a top rope chair shot. You know, he's stealing your move too. An acid drop is attempted in the ring. And Awesome tosses Spike Dudley clean out of the ring and through a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much fun. Do you think Paulie's going up to Mike Awesome? He's like, hey, Guilty's Charge, we got Guilty's Charge coming up. You're gonna defend the title. And Awesome's like, obviously, I'm the world champion. And Paulie's like, you're gonna defend against Spike. And you think Mike Awesome's like, oh, I'm so excited.
I'm about to throw this man.
I'm gonna come
like
up with
he's
the most
football.
The most creative shit. I'm about to whip this dude around the ring. I'm gonna throw him
mess him up.
I'm gonna throw him so far he lands in Mississippi. This is gonna be awesome.
They start fighting onto the top rope. Awesome ends the fighting. He ends the match with a top rope awesome bomb through a table.
With one arm. He one arms Spike. This is, I think, my favorite like feat. And obviously, like, Spike's not a heavy guy. He's 150 pounds.
No.
Mike Awesome, he throws him over like he's a sack of potatoes. It's crazy.
Here's the thing, though, right? Like, people always say the thing about sack of potatoes, right?
Yeah.
Potatoes are kind of heavy, man. Put a sack. I've never had to carry a sack of potatoes. I don't think it's light.
You never bought a sack of potatoes? Dude, it's like
I never had to carry a sack of potatoes.
You got somebody who just brings you sacks of potatoes? That's crazy.
I assume the potatoes that my mom used to cook came in a sack, man.
You don't buy potatoes?
Here's the thing. I do my meal prepping like week and like, you know, for the week. So I go Monday morning when I drop my girlfriend off at work. I'll stop at the grocery store, pick up what I need. I go home, I make it. So I just get like 3-4 potatoes.
In Philadelphia, we're going to eat like absolute lunatics.
I think it's like a Chick-fil-A around the corner.
I'm trying Raising Cane's. It's literally outside of our hotel is a Raising Cane's.
Oh.
And I've never been.
Cane sauce is freaking.
I'm excited. Oh,
you're about to experience my favorite fast food sauce.
All right. Do you know about how Mike Awesome lost the ECW World Heavyweight title?
Lost it? No idea.
This is really interesting. So, there due to concerns, so what happened was April 10th, 2000, Mike Awesome made a surprise appearance on WCW Nitro. He helped the New Blood. This was the New Blood versus Millionaires Club faction, which I'll talk about a little bit later. While he was still ECW World Heavyweight Champion. Apparently, according to Lance Storm, Mike Awesome refused to sign a new contract with ECW until Paul Heyman paid him overdue wages. So now ECW's in a conundrum. Their World Heavyweight Champion has essentially turned their back on the company to sign with WCW, but he's still World Champion. And they don't want to have a Medusa thing happen. So what they do is WCW refrained from having Awesome appear on television shows with the ECW title. He was not allowed to show it. And then they reached a compromise with ECW. And this is the weirdest compromise. Awesome, who was a WCW employee and was ECW champion, appeared a few days later at an ECW event in Indianapolis, accompanied by WCW's head of security. He lost the title to Taz. Taz at the time was a WWF employee.
Oh my God, I didn't even...
So he lost a WCW wrestler lost the ECW world title to a WWF wrestler who lost it a week later to Tommy Dreamer, who, if you're wondering, lost it 20 minutes later to Justin Credible. Hot potato, pass it on. But isn't this the weirdest thing in the world that the only compromise they could come to was to have Mike Awesome lose the belt to a WWF guy?
How is that the comp? Why not just put it on Dreamer?
No idea. Apparently, there was a push by Mike Awesome. He wanted to drop the belt to somebody else. He wanted to drop the belt.
Just incredible.
He wanted to drop the belt to Rhino. He's like, we could have had a really good match, and like it would have been good. And Rhino was getting a huge push at the time, but instead, this was what they came up with. So now we have Mike Awesome in WCW. He continued to be a major factor for the New Blood. If you're wondering, New Blood, think of what Main Event Mafia was. That was the Millionaires Club. So it had everybody in it. You know, all the WCW, the big guys, Sting, Ric Flair, Kevin Nash, they were all in the Millionaires Club. And the New Blood was kind of like, hey, here's all the cool, hot new guys on the scene. It had guys like Billy Kidman. It had Mike Awesome. It had Rey Mysterio. It had Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare. It had Hoovy. It had like all the younger guys who were looking for their spot.
People are in this group.
On here, they are listed as having, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, like 25 people in this group.
All right.
And then the Millionaires Club was a group of 8. Flair, Hogan, Nash, DDP, Sting, Sid Vicious, Kurt Hennig, Lex Luger.
How is this a rivalry? The numbers alone are enough. Listen, at some point, we just have to be realistic with ourselves. Under no circumstance should a group of 25 be losing to a group of 8.
When the group of 8 has Hulkamania on their side, brother, that's what you know. Our next match is WCW Slamboree 2001. Love the name Slamboree. It is Mike Awesome versus Canyon. Any excuse to watch Canyon.
I love Canyon.
So technically this isn't New Blood versus Millionaires Club because Canyon isn't in the Millionaires Club, but he is babyface. Cause here's the weird thing. The New Blood were the heels. And initially the plan was for the New Blood to be like, you know, people would cheer for them to like take the place of these old guys. And everyone just cheered for the old guys. Everyone's like, fuck it. We like Ric Flair. We know what Ric Flair's about. we like Sting.
Fickle
people.
Fickle.
This is also coming after the you've heard of the WCW Hard Reset, right?
Yeah, no.
Where Vince Russo came out and essentially was like, we're vacating all the titles, we're having tournaments, we're starting brand new.
Yes. Yeah, so okay,
This is after the Hard Reset. After the Slamboree, this angle would kind of be scrapped, but I'll talk about that later. What did you think of the match?
This was a hell of a match.
This is a good match.
Still not my recommendation.
No. It's weirdly, it's like the fourth best match, but it's still really good.
This is an incredible match. Like, mm-hmm. This is a very, very good match. I think of all the matches, we'll get to the rankings later, but like, I would say, yeah, this is probably the fourth best.
Yeah. Which is crazy because it's a good pay-per-view match with a nondescript finish, but I mean, there's a more conclusive thing that happens later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one. Awesome with the tope, like right off the bat.
The match.
Just right off the bat. He whips Canyon into the guardrail, then into some steps, flying clothesline for a near fall. He gets some chair shots to the gut and then a big one to the back. And I was like, where's the disqualification? Did not realize this was a street fight. What are we doing?
There's also some unique Canyon offense, because that's always something people talk about with Chris Canyon, is the unique offense. And I want to talk about it briefly. Canyon runs awesome.
Better than Canyon.
He runs awesome into a ring post and has him so his stomach is facing the ring post and he's on his side. So he's like tucked around the ring post with his feet and his head sticking out. And then drop kicks him stomach first into the ring post. And I was like, that's just a weird thing. Nobody would do that. Like, but Canyon would. He's like, yeah, I can figure this out. That sounds like a fun way to make a living.
Loud EC dub chants.
Yes. Wow. Very loud EC dub chants.
They fight into the crowd for a hot second.
I don't think Canyon ended up in ECW at all, but I'm gonna just double check.
I couldn't tell you. Mike Awesome starts choking Canyon with a camera cable. He hits a slingshot splash for a near fall. More chair shots by Awesome. And then we get a very, very nice spot, which I appreciated very much. Awesome goes for an avalanche, like a chair shot off the top rope.
Yeah.
He gets crotched, like facing the opposite way, like he's facing the post.
The crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. Canyon ends up hitting like a neck breaker version of the Tower of London for a near fall.
It's very nice. Then he hits a swinging neck breaker for a two. Also, Canyon, never in ECW, just a cool guy. Awesome rolls through after the swing neck or the crossbody the Canyon hits, gets his own two count. We get what I described as like a spin out flapjack by Canyon. That's a good move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably the best way you could. I mean, I just kind of called it an F5. It just kind of looked like an F5.
Yeah. It's
like
a variation of instead of landing all the way around, he only like spins him halfway. Awesome bomb by Awesome, where Canyon lands on his neck. Like, very much.
It just looked like he sandbagged him.
It did look like he sandbagged him. And you don't
look like Canyon sandbagged him.
It does.
The reason why I think so is because immediately Awesome stomps on his neck.
Yeah.
He did the Brock.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Awesome pulls up the ringside mats. Underneath, concrete. Surprise.
I'll never forget. I wasn't there. But my best friend Nico, shout out, he's not listening, but shout out. He told this story about this kid that we went to high school with. Shout out to my man Jeffrey. And in one of his classes, I don't know what it was, but the conversation about concrete came up.
Okay.
And Jeffrey turns to the people talking about concrete and just goes, "What's concrete?"
What?
We were like juniors in high school.
Oh my god. Okay. If we're sharing dumb things we've heard people say, I did once hear that when I was in grade 9, there was a girl in my class who was like really sad because the US was having a civil war, and we were like, no they're not, it was 2006. I'm like, no they weren't. And she was like, well yeah, like they sent troops into Iraq. And we're like, yeah. She's like, that's in the United States. She confused Iraq and Iowa. She two very different places. I I hope she's doing well. All right. So Awesome really wants to power bomb. He wants to awesome bomb Canyon onto the steel or onto the concrete outside. That's his whole plan.
Yeah.
He does a slingshot shoulder block into the ring, and then Canyon avoids an awesome bomb in the concrete, sent to the ramp. Awesome then goes out and exposes different concrete, and that's when we get some interference. Who shows up?
We get the Wolfpack music. Big sexy Kevin Nash comes out. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
He starts beating up on Awesome. Then a bunch of New Blood people come and jump Nash. Then Flair, Sting come. They clear house. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so there's no decisive winner between Canyon and Awesome until the main event of the match, or the main event of the show. So the main event of the show was a three-tiered cage match for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship, which was held by David Arquette was defending against Jeff
from Scream.
He was defending against Jeff Jarrett and DDP. The cage used was the one featured in Ready to Rumble, which had premiered several weeks earlier in theaters nationwide, according to Wikipedia. The cages were stacked one on top of the other. Each had a roof on top. So imagine three Hell in a Cells. The bottom cage was the whole ring with the trap door, which led to the second cage, which had various weapons. And the third cage was essentially a storage closet that also had several guitars for Jeff Jarrett, I guess. And a hanging from the ceiling just above the roof was the championship belt. So you had to go out and grab the belt. So it's like a cage match, but also a Hell in a Cell match, but also a TLC match. Weird, right? Jarrett won the match because David Arquette betrayed DDP and hit him with a guitar when all three were on the second cage. Afterwards, Mike Awesome came out to attack DDP. Mike Awesome wants to awesome bomb DDP off of the cage. Canyon interrupts him. What happens to Canyon, Javier?
Canyon gets fucking flung off the top of the cage onto the ramp. Not through a table, not through like a whole bunch of tables, not into a safety pad, none of that. No, off cage, Canyon, boom, ramp.
It sucks. There's
it was
no
the Jericho.
Way.
It's the blood and guts Jericho spot for those who want a more modern example. When MJF flung Jericho off the top of the blood and guts cage onto like that crash pad ramp thing. Yeah. That, but 2001, whenever this was.
2000, near 2000.
What is happening?
So Mike Awesome, that's a huge moment. He ends the pay-per-view by throwing Canyon off of this massive cage onto the ramp. That is the last shot. The last shot is not Jeff Jarrett winning the WCW World Heavyweight title. It is that. It's Mike Awesome throwing Canyon off the cage. So how does WCW capitalize on this? Well, he was given the career
Canyon.
He was given the career killer nickname, which is an awesome nickname. That's a pretty good one. They would have the end of the angle between New Blood and Millionaire's Club happen at Bash at the Beach, which was the infamous Vince Russo shoot promo, which caused Hogan and Bischoff to leave the promotion. There was a New Blood Rising later. And what did they do with Mike Awesome in all of this? He became the Fat Chick Thriller.
I love it.
We are going to take a break. When we get back, we look at what WCW decided to do with Mike Awesome. Back from the break, after Bash the Beach in July 2000, Mike Awesome started calling himself the Fat Chick Thriller and became, according to Wikipedia, infatuated with heavy-set women. He was out there just living. He feuded with Scott Steiner and feuded with Lance Storm for the WCW United States Championship as the Fat Chick Thriller.
Love it.
Honestly, like, if that's part of your personality, that's cool. It should not be your gimmick.
Why can't it be?
Have you seen the clip of John Cena on Howard Stern? Have you seen that clip?
Like the one of him not being able to say anything bad about Vince McMahon?
No, it's one from like years ago where he's talking about how like he took a heavy set woman home like the previous week and that it was a very good time. John Cena, the true Fat Chick Thriller.
Look, man, they say that the best wrestling gimmicks are your personality turned up to a million. And what if Awesome just, you know, what if he's What if he likes a little meat on the bone?
Nothing wrong with that. However,
why can't that be his? That's his. That's if that's him, that could be his thing.
However, WCW decided to not make that his only thing because on September 6, 2000, on Thunder, Awesome's gimmick was changed to that 70s guy, Mike Awesome. He dressed in 70s inspired attire. He hosted the Lava Lamp Lounge interview segment, which that's a porn site. He was given a bus. I don't know. I assume so. It sounds like one.
I thought you were being legit. I was like, what?
He was given a bus that resembled the one from the Partridge Family to drive into arenas as part of his entrance. So they committed to the bit. But our promo this week is him talking to Mean Gene as that 70s guy. Your thoughts?
This might be the greatest pro interview like segment of all time.
Disagree. Like, it's Stan Hansen. We know this.
No, interview segment. I'm talking like including the interviewer.
Oh, okay.
Mean Gene is like, is senile. I don't even know what to say right here. This is incredible. What I'm like, at some point, he's talking about 70s people, you know, Steel Curtain, all this other stuff. He talks about the Big Red Machine. And Mike Awesome just goes, "You talking about my love machine, Mean Gene?" And he goes, "No, I'm talking about the Cincinnati Reds."
Well, the Cincinnati Reds were good in the 70s. That's why.
Yeah, they won like four titles in the 70s.
I need to ask you, because you are a youth. Do you know the two women that he mentioned before? Do you know who they are?
I didn't hear the names.
Farrah Fawcett?
I know who Farrah Fawcett is, yes.
And Linda Carter?
Yeah. Okay, Linda Carter is Wonder Woman.
Okay, good.
And Farrah Fawcett, I couldn't tell you a character, but I know who Farrah Fawcett is, yeah.
She was an angel in Charlie's Angels.
That's the one.
Yeah. Okay, just checking. You know, you're the youth. I need to make sure. Keep you in line.
Okay,
make sure
first off, you weren't alive then either, buddy.
I know, but I have the same taste as like an 86-year-old man.
You're 5 years older than me. What are we doing here?
Gene says he needs tips on picking up chicks, and Mike Awesome's one and only tip is bad.
First thing you have to do for these foxy ladies is never, and I mean never, take no for an answer.
Mike Awesome just not contributing to consent culture. Just not.
Huh? Okay, first off, consent culture is not a thing. It's just the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just not doing consent.
It is the standard.
It's the standard.
It's like, that's not even the bar. It's the requirement.
It's his only tip. It's the only thing he has to tell me, Gene, is to just like, don't take no for an answer.
And then he says he just never takes no for an answer, and he wears polyester from head to toe. And then Mean Gene asks,
he also says that includes his underwear.
Sure, congratulations. And then he gets asked by Mean Gene if he knows the Bee Gees. And also replies, aren't they still around today? And Mean Gene just goes, well, I'm sure they're still around somewhere today.
Hello.
That's it. That's the interview.
Mike Awesome's shirt is a vibe. I would wear that shirt today.
What is going on?
It's a very weird interview. I didn't watch the match that follows after. It's a hardcore match on like WCW Worldwide.
You want a quick recap of it?
Tell me the finish.
No, I'm going to tell you the whole thing. It's a very quick match. He wrestles in the outfit because he can't fully take the shirt off. He does that climb up to the corner, back elbow. He hits a running splash for a near fall. The guy who he's wrestling, Sharp, I think was his name.
Steve Sharp.
Yeah, does a Samoan drop, which looked really good. Then hits a slingshot dive to the outside. Awesome hits a tope. Chair shot to the gut. He grabs a table. He sets it up against the corner. Alabama slam. Awesome bomb through the table that's set up in the corner. 1, 2, 3. He wins.
Okay. Honestly, not bad. That 70s guy was a terrible gimmick. And so
that entire clip that will be somewhere where we post.
It'll be in the...
That is my recommendation for the week. Just that entire thing.
It's in the description of the video. It's also in the podcast notes, wherever you're listening.
In I don't care what you do. It's not my recommendation match for the week. But the entire thing, it's like 5-6 minutes, whatever it may be. Go watch it, please.
In a shoot interview that Mike Awesome did in 2003, he said that the infamous incident between Vince Russo and Hulk Hogan may have been one of the reasons that he got stuck with things like the Fat Chick Thrilla and That 70s Guy. Essentially, since he was a cousin of Horace Hogan, who also left WCW after the Bash at the Beach incident, he was the only guy left close to, like, not only the only guy, but like a guy left close to them. So they essentially made him a punching bag and were like, here, you could get all these shit gimmicks, which they were shit gimmicks. And Mike Awesome is an awesome wrestler. Mike Awesome would go to WWF. He was part of the purchase during, you know, when WWF bought WCW. He was part of the Invasion storyline. He was the first invader to win gold. He debuted on an episode of Raw June 25th, 2001, where Test defended the hardcore title against Rhino. After Rhino gored Test against the wall and pinned him, Awesome hit Rhino with a metal pipe, powerbombed him onto a ladder, pinned him, and became the 24/7 hardcore champion. So he was the first one. He was released from WWE in September of 2002, along with Sean Stasiak and Horace Hogan. What a class. Here's his quote on being in WWE. Quote, being in the WWE sucked. I hated it. You had to kiss everyone's ass. You had to be on your political toes all the time. You would not believe the backstage politics. You were getting stabbed in the back constantly. I was so happy when I was told I was gone. End quote. So a good time.
Yeah. I don't think he minced words.
No mincing. He would go in the Indies. He would appear in TNA briefly, 2003, I believe, or 2004. No. And then make his way back to WWE for ECW One Night Stand. That is where our last match takes place. At that wonderful event, there was a match between Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka.
This is my recommendation for the week.
This match rules.
This is the best match of the week. This is just so good. There is one problem with this match, and we will get to it.
Is it the beginning with Joel Gertner and Eric Bischoff?
No, but Joe Gertner does interview Bischoff asking him for a job, and he's told no.
Yeah.
He berates ECW and the fans for heat, all that other stuff, yada, yada. Then the Mike Awesome and Tanaka come out. They mostly look the same, to be honest.
They look the same.
You can tell, you know, a little bit of aging has taken place because obviously time passes, but they pretty much look the same. Joey Styles is just the worst in this match. Just the worst.
Joey Styles has a personal vendetta against Mike Awesome during this match because of the way Mike Awesome treated ECW in departing them for WCW. And so he's going out of his way to make Mike Awesome look bad at the start of the match.
I hate everything about that. So Awesome starts he hits a tope towards the beginning of the match. And Styles goes, and I quote, it's a shame he didn't succeed in taking his own life because he hits a tope suicida.
Yes. For context for the listeners, Mike Awesome would die by suicide in 2007. So in hindsight, a very, very poor taste of words.
Fucking hell, man. Tanaka
obviously,
back
no way to know that then, but still just not a very good
thing. That's also just not
say.
Something you say.
Even if you hate the way the guy left. And like eventually Mike Awesome would turn around, or Joey Styles would turn around in this match because of how fucking good this match is.
Yeah. The commentary throughout the entire match, because he turns it down a little bit, but he's still going with the hate. Like, I am a generational hater. I am the LeBron James-esque Wembanyama prospect when it comes to hating. You can attest to this as a friend of mine. You know.
This is
I'm
true.
A hater. Yep. Hater to the core.
Yep.
Even I can say this is a little bit too far.
There
are rules of engagement when it comes to hating.
Yep.
And going a guy hitting a suicide dive and them saying it's a shame he didn't succeed in killing himself is fucked up.
On the opposite side of opinion of Mike Awesome, JBL loves Mike Awesome. You can see because they have the Raw and SmackDown Superstars up there. Yeah. JBL is getting into this match and fucking loves it. Him and Orlando Jordan are like, yo, this guy rules. So some other things that happen. Awesome sent in the crowd, Tanaka with a running chair shot. Clothesline by Awesome, another while on the apron. And then Awesome sets up an Awesome Bombs Tanaka through a table at ringside. This is the worst neck landing of any powerbomb in this episode.
Yeah.
It's very rare that you see an ECW ref check on someone, and immediately Tanaka was checked on. They were like, oh, fuck, okay.
Yeah, that guy. I'm shocked he wasn't paralyzed. Like, genuinely.
It was a bad time.
Tanaka somehow survives. Awesome hits a flying splash for a near fall. Awesome bomb off of pure raw power is how he gets him up. Like, literally, he's getting no help off of rotation, momentum, whatever maybe from Tanaka. Yeah. He just picks him up, pure core, leg, back, arm, everything, strength, just boom and boom.
It was everything day. He's like, I got this. Like,
he said, I'm built different. Gets him down, doesn't go for the pin. He gets a chair. Evan, your reaction leads me to believe that you just want to take it away from here.
Awesome hits Tanaka with a headshot. Tanaka doesn't move. It's like nothing happened. Tanaka gets hit with a second chair shot. He now has to Hulk up. He looks like Hogan kind of doing the Hulk up as he's powering through. He avoids another chair shot, and then Tanaka turns around into a third chair shot that finally knocks him down. Three direct headshots. It's a lot. I don't know why Masato Tanaka does this. Like, we like you. This is how I feel about Darby Allin. Like, stop doing things for, like, we all like you. You don't need to do this anymore. If Tanaka takes a headshot at Tribute to the Extreme when we're there, I'm going to just scream at him and be like, you don't need to do this.
Like, you're already successful.
You're so good. He then hits a front flip stunner off the middle rope.
What? He follows that up with the tornado DDT onto a stack of chairs. The finish to the previous match that we saw for a near fall. He gets a concerto, pretty much.
Yep.
And a middle rope chair splash. He takes a chair, just dives with it for a near fall. Spear by Awesome. Yep. Chair shot off the top rope. The greatest move in the history of pro wrestling. And then they... Like, I don't even know what happens here. So, like, they're talking about Awesome's gimmicks on commentary.
Yeah, commentary's distracted. But what is happening is Awesome goes and grabs a table, puts it in the ring. He puts Tanaka on the top rope. Tanaka reverses the Awesome Bomb attempt into a DDT through the table, essentially spiking Awesome straight down because the table was right underneath them.
Yeah.
Awesome then goes back up, hits a reverse Awesome Bomb, so the bomb is like he's going backwards off the rope through the remnants of the table, and I swear to God, Tanaka almost has a metal bar go through his neck. You know that clip of Seth Rollins avoiding the Hell in a Cell coming down?
Like the last second.
It was that, except instead of the cell coming down, it was Tanaka coming down on a bar. He would have ended up like Raymond Holt in Florida, where he gets the bar through the leg. It would have been a bad time. I hope everyone enjoyed my Brooklyn Nine-Nine reference.
I'm almost there. I'm like 5 episodes into season 3, so we're almost there.
You're almost at Greg and Larry. What a great time.
Actually, I think I just finished the third heist episode.
The crowd is so excited. Standing O, ECW chants, this match rules.
Like, Joey Styles will not let it go.
he does come around to be like, this is a really good match. Like, this is excellent stuff. This was the standout match of ECW Night One Night Stand the first time. Like, this was the number one match.
Did we get to the finish yet?
No, it's your time to shine.
Yes. So a table is on the outside. Awesome does an Awesome Bomb from the ring through that table ringside and then follows it up with a tope splash. One, two, you don't even see, it happened so quickly. He literally did it in successive order. Like, threw him, immediately ran back off the ropes, yep. Boom, toe face splash. Because the camera didn't cut. You just looked, and suddenly, boom, Mike Awesome is there on top of Tanaka.
It's one, the two, best, three. It's the best one no-cut thing that Kevin Dunn has ever done.
Holy crap. It is insane. This was my recommendation. This is incredible. I don't remember one night, the first one night stand, because I had no interest in ECW, if I'm being completely honest, because I just didn't watch it. I didn't know anything about it. The internet wasn't privy enough to me, accessible enough to me for me to like do research on it as much. Yeah. Also, I was like, this was early 2005, right? So I was 7 years old. Like, it wasn't.
If you're wondering, the matches to go back and watch from ECW One Night Stand the first time, the three that I'd recommend are probably Mike Awesome Tanaka. Obviously, it's the best match on the card. Super Crazy Tajiri and Little Guido in a three-way dance. And then I also like the opener, which was Lance Storm and Chris Jericho. The most disappointing match on the whole card is Benoit Guerrero.
Yeah.
And they have, I know Eddie talked about it at one point where he's like, something was off. Like, we just didn't click. Like, it was just a bad night for us. And so it just wasn't the same. Mike Awesome, after this, he essentially retired from wrestling. He served as a real estate agent in New Tampa, Florida. And like I mentioned earlier, unfortunately passed away due to suicide on February 17th, 2007. Now, having now learned a lot more about the story of Mike Awesome, kind of his career, what do you think?
This guy rules. Like, this is one of legitimately my favorite wrestlers that we've covered on this podcast. It's one of
my favorite discoveries for you. Like, this, I knew watching this that you would like this.
You sell me with the powerbomb. Like, I am the biggest Wardlow guy. I want him to beat Samoa Joe, if I'm being completely honest, when I was Dynamite. Just because I love powerbombs, man. You give me a guy who does a powerbomb as a finisher, I'm there. Obafemi, the North American champion over in NXT, big sit-out powerbomb. That's my freaking guy. You give me a big man doing a powerbomb, sit-out, standing, repeated, release, whatever. Give me a powerbomb, I'm in. I'm sold, 100%. And this guy, his whole freaking gimmick was the awesome bomb, pretty much. And I was okay with that, because he also did a lot more things. He was a big man who was doing freaking cruiserweight moves. He was like doing topes and all this other stuff. This is stuff that like Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns nowadays bust out in special occasions. And he was just over there doing it for fun. Like, you know, the Alabama Slam was really cool. The hardcore matches were great. Like, this is a guy who I am genuinely surprised wasn't a bigger deal for his era, because he had the look. He had the charisma, clearly. Like, just that interview segment alone, this man can make anything work. Like, I was sold on that 70s gimmick just off of that. The bad part in that promo segment was Mean Gene. And like, he's a great wrestler. Like, I don't know if he was just typecast as like, ECW Japan guy, nah, or if it was just the relation to Horace Hogan, what the deal was there. But like, the fact that Mike Awesome wasn't one of the stars of the Attitude Era is genuinely surprising.
I think the thing for me is, I didn't know about the level of success in FMW. I knew that he was in Japan. Like, that, I knew, like many others, that he had traveled to Japan. I didn't realize the extent, like the longest reigning FMW heavyweight champion, like taking the title and defeating guys like Hayabusa, having these matches with Tanaka over there. Like, I didn't know that was the level of things we were dealing with Mike Awesome over there. I knew about his dominating run in ECW because he was probably like the best monster that they had in ECW. Like, he was that guy. And he was really great at it, because they had like a couple of really good archetypes for like heel champions. Like, they had Reiner near the end. They had Shane Douglas, who was really good at it. And they had Mike Awesome in between. Like, he was one of the best ECW champions in terms of his run. And I think unfairly, people lump that 70s guy and the Fat Chick Thriller on him, like it was his decision or something to kind of have these gimmicks, when from everything we've read, it was not. So tough spot for him to be in, but I love that. I love what he did with it, and what a talented, and I'm so glad you mentioned, just a deep bag. What a deep yes. bag for a big man, because we've seen big men
with three
moves. It's
a career to be celebrated.
Yeah.
And celebrated.
It was really good. We encourage everyone to like check out the links in the description below if you're on YouTube. Check out the podcast notes if you are listening wherever you're listening, because they will all have all the matches. Of course, watch a Tanaka match, because it's a hell of a time. Either one.
Watch that promo segment. Great. Yes.
Watch the weird promo segment. All right. As I said, the match links are in the bio. Also, YouTube, subscribe. We're at 250 subscribers. We want to get that all the way up. We have so much WrestleMania content coming. Make sure that you are there. Also, in the description, you will find the merch link. You can get cool sweaters like Javier and I have on. You can get the nice hat like Javier has on. We got tote bags. Got my tote bag that came in.
My tote Very bag's exciting. All the way over there. I'm not going to go get that, but it's really nice.
Go and check out the merch. The merch quality is outstanding. We went with a company called Bonfire. They're putting unbelievable stuff out. Check it out there.
The hoodie is incredibly comfortable. I wore it on a previous, probably a YouTube video or one of the recent episodes when I got it. It's so comfy. The shirt is great. Just the unisex t-shirt, I highly recommend.
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff all around.
Also, social media, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Crossbody of Work as we continue to grow. We put all of our YouTube stuff, our reels and stuff on there as well, so you can see all of our Instagram reels. Join the like 4,600 people who follow us on Instagram now, because we have some really funny reels. Like, it's not all wrestling content. Some of it's just memes and shit, and we have a good time. Make sure you hit and subscribe wherever you're listening. Share the podcast with your friends, because, of course, we're going to have all that WrestleMania goodness coming your way. Next week, we conclude the series on the Extreme. We are going to take a look at one of Javier's favorites, Stevie Richards.
Oh, baby.
I'm letting him pick the matches. It's going to be a time.
God, that's a terrible idea. I do not know any ECW Stevie Richards stuff.
I'll find you one ECW match.
My thing with Stevie Richards, aside from the fact that he's the greatest wrestler of all time, is just, I don't know what it was, but when I was a kid, and Stevie Richards was like on freaking like whatever the green brand, what was that green brand show that WWE
Velocity?
Had? When he was like on Velocity and stuff, like I loved Stevie Richards. Like just he I don't know what it was. I was just in on the guy. And, you know, I rewatched the Attitude Era back when on the network when that was like a whole playlist. And Stevie Richards was just someone that always stood out to me as just my guy. And I still love him to this day. This is an episode for me. And I'm very happy to do it. And I'm excited.
We're also going to have a bonus podcast episode. It's not a deep dive, but it is kind of like a career retrospective on Paul Heyman before he's inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Look for that in your podcast feed and on YouTube sometime in the near future. Very, very exciting stuff. All right, enough about what we're doing in the future. It's time for some advice for Right Meow. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, it's good advice that I saw on one of those random like Instagram, I assume they're on TikTok too, Instagram accounts that's like, they just go up to random people and is like, hey, what's one piece of advice that you would give someone about X or whatever? And like someone responded, and I thought this was really good. So I gave it a like, and I remembered it for this. This was like last week, and I remembered it for this episode. Don't let a bad person turn you into a bad person.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Don't let a bad person turn you into a bad person. A bad experience turn you into a bad person. Don't let bad make you bad. Just be, you know, I'm not saying like move on from it and all this other stuff, you know, process it. If a bad thing happened to you, process it. Like
acknowledge it.
You know, acknowledge it. Go through the steps you need to take in order to sort of become like get on the other side of it. But don't let that experience make you a bad person. Remember, the old adage, hurt people, hurt people.
Hurt Business. I would also like to know, if you're not watching this on YouTube, you miss Javier using, I think, some sort of bottle.
Oh, this is Aquaphor. It's just one of those massive Aquaphor sticks.
He started using an Aquaphor stick as a microphone, despite the fact he has a full functioning microphone in front of him.
I also have a DayQuil bottle. You want me to use that?
What is going on? What are you, starting a break? Are you Breaking Bad right now? All right. You're missing out on all this cool visuals if you're not watching us on YouTube. So check us out on YouTube at Crossbody of Work. We're back next week. Stevie Richards and Paul Heyman. We'll talk to you then.
No, it's the Cincinnati Reds.